Let's see if we can also keep this within like a reasonable range. Let's not
oh my God.
Be that close to the 2 hour mark. I feel like we won't be for the sake of I had a hard time finding things.
I'm curious if you had a harder time finding good or bad things.
Good.
Okay, same.
Look, that's going to be the case for literally all of these movies. It's going to be super hard to find something good to chime in on. And my bias comes up with one of my points.
Okay, can I just say that I grouped all of my good points into just one? So I technically only have one good point.
Well, I mean, I think you've done that in other episodes where you've taken, like, it's all in, like, one umbrella of a thing, but then actually talked about each one individually as your three.
Yeah.
So it's up to you how you want to do it. I'm good with it. I mean, if you want to get through the goods super fast because it won't take long, that'd be fine.
I feel like we should do that because I feel like this is where our taste in movies will like peak in how much they differ.
Oh yeah. Welcome back everyone to the Movie Masochist Podcast, where two friends try to find the fun in painful films. My name is Joby.
Hi, I'm Kim.
And I hope you guys managed to enjoy yourself with Batman and Robin. I say that very wishfully because I don't know if I did.
I love that you question whether or not you had a good time, because I feel like I did.
This is part of my good points of I had to like reframe how I was watching this movie. And it was part of one of my good points, and I think that helped me, because honestly, I tried twice to watch this. It wasn't because I'm like, I can't do this right now. It was technical difficulties where my internet was crapping out. And it was buffering and pausing way too much. I'm like, let me do this fresh on another day.
Ooh, that sucks.
I stopped it one night, started over the next morning, but then I had the thought of one of my good points, and I'm like, I'm going to run with this instead, and it helped a little bit. Well, what did you find so enjoyable out of this that you're like, oh, I had a good time, it was good?
Should we just dive right in?
If you'd like.
Okay. Honestly, I truly feel like I had a good time because I love campy movies, and this movie is like peak campy as heck.
That is fair.
It's at that point where it's like it's so bad that it turns to be good again. Like I'm at that point where I'm enjoying how bad it was.
In all fairness, that was
Mortal Kombat Annihilation for me.
Ooh, okay.
That was that for me for a while. It was like, this is so good, it's bad, and here's why. I don't even remember what my points were. This was back when I was writing an article for that movie website, and I don't even remember what I wrote.
Oh, no.
So, that's interesting. Campy can be fun sometimes. Let's be honest, though. It can be really fun.
I feel like if I have to, like, dissect it, though, I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, oh, wait, hold on. Was this film supposed to be serious? Because they did not achieve that.
So, I did research on this one, and luckily, mostly Wikipedia helped me with a lot of it, where it answered a lot of questions.
You did more than me. Okay, yeah. I did so, Wikipedia this one.
This movie, first off, this was made by Joel Schumacher. Always at least one name I screw up. There we go.
There it is.
Joel Schumacher. So his previous works after this movie was Phantom of the Opera and a movie that's really good, The Number 23 with Jim Carrey. Those were two of his movies after the fact. For that, he did St. Elmo's Fire, The Lost Boys, The Wiz, A Time to Kill, and then obviously Batman Forever. But the first two movies were Tim Burton.
That makes sense. Okay.
And then after that, when they brought in Joel Schumacher, they really changed up the vibe in Batman Forever. And then for this one, they essentially wanted to, what was the term they actually used? Toyetic or something like that? Where they basically wanted to make it more geared towards kids and selling toys.
Okay. See, that makes a lot of sense because, fun fact, I watched this with Joe last night, and there was a line that Poison Ivy says to Batman where she was like, oh, every Poison Ivy comes with a second figure of Bane.
And I was like, yeah. With Bane included?
Yeah. Like, what is that line?
I don't know. It was a choice. That's always going to be our go-to phrase for when we question something and we don't have an answer. Guess. It was a choice. And the last time we said that was in terms of the bat nipples. And there is apparently an answer to this one as well.
Oh my God, I need to know what this answer is.
He essentially said he modeled the suit after Greek statues and medical drawings. Problem is, that's It's a little awkward to have that for a kid's toy.
First of all, I have two problems with that. And I will have to thank Eros, because I was talking about this with him beforehand, too. Because okay. I said to him, I can't believe Robin also has the nipples. And Eros goes, yeah, but then they didn't do it for Batgirl. Like, they just stopped. They did it for Batgirl?
It's a little bit there. It's not as prominent, but they're there. There is a slightly extra little bump at the peak of the breastplate.
Yeah, because I was there.
I was curious, too.
Because, my justification for why they wouldn't have it for Batgirl, hilariously, is because, you know, female-presenting nipples are not kosher.
Oh, absolutely not. So that's where things get a little interesting. It's like, where do we draw the line? We have something that's supposed to be geared towards kids, so let's definitely not do that.
Yeah.
But also, this is the 90s, where things are rather chauvinistic in different ways. Where, a few years later, we had just a scene of Jessica Alba stripping in the middle of a street. For no freaking reason at all.
Right.
Here we go, fast forward to Alicia Silverstone in this movie, where this is basically the peak of her attractiveness coming off of Clueless.
Right.
So, I don't know. But again, it was not as prominent.
I really didn't notice. I'm mad.
It's a lot more now subtle. Now knowing. A lot more subtle than Chris O'Donnell's and George Clooney's.
I'm still really now mad.
I don't blame you. I was very shocked. That they were even
remotely visible. This now, but
it's okay. Another time, you can look at that later on. But
wow, I can't believe we're starting the top of this podcast with so bat nipples, y'all.
Look, with this movie, we have to talk about them.
But also, there's a very obvious curvature to their butts, too.
Oh my god, I really wanted to talk about that. They prominently featured everyone's butts. Like, at the top of the film, the best part, really, was just that when they donned the costumes. And they just, focused on their asses for a little too long.
Yeah. Why did we need a still of this? Where you could literally pause and they could just be George Clooney's ass.
Needed it. Yeah, George Clooney's
possibly.
Ass.
It's like, dude, this is very much geared towards kids. Let's give at least the moms who are bringing their kids to this movie a little bit of eye candy. We get Uma Thurman in pretty much skin-tight suits the entire time. Let's give him George Clooney's butt.
My favorite is that Joe made me rewind this scene because he was just like, Kim, did you notice that? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then there's just one very brief scene as he's falling at the beginning of the movie, going after Freeze. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very prominent, tiny version of his butt, but it's just so round. And I'm like, why is it so round?
Interesting.
It's very brief. It's very brief. I didn't catch it, but Joe did.
That one I missed. Yeah, there was a lot of weird things about this movie. There was also apparently supposed to be a third. They canceled.
Ugh, lame.
Despite this being kind of a four-part thing, because there is one actor who is a constant between Michael Keaton all the way to George Clooney. That was Alfred.
Yeah, I was gonna say it should just be Alfred. Can't imagine anybody else being the guy.
So Alfred was in all four movies. Obviously, we had three Batman. Chris O'Donnell comes in during Batman Forever, and then here we are.
I thought this was the first one for some reason, and I'm like, I should go back to watch the others. So my timeline for these movies are all over the place.
I was very tempted to do my own double feature, but only talk about this one of at least Batman Forever, because there is a big problem that I had in one of my bad points, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to go back and watch. But before we get into those, let's at least get into the good points.
All right. Okay. So I'm just going to compile everything into one. Yes, I love that it was campy. I love that there was a goth card, bank card, all the puns from Dr. Freeze, Mr. Freeze. The whimsical audio cues, so fun. Knowing that it was supposed to be a serious film takes me out, but...
Oh, so that was the thing. That's what helped me get through the second watch there was I realized if you look at it from the perspective of it has a lot of vibes from the old school Adam West.
Yeah.
The dialogue is really campy. The quick action sequences where it's not this big drawn out fight where there's a lot of this dunk choreography. It was more just quick punch here, move here, here, and here. It's more of a dance rather than a fight. Even Poison Ivy being a femme fatale, it's that is peak of this, think of this as a long-ass Adam West episode.
Yeah.
And it made it better.
Yeah, and I think that also just informs how much, why it was just so fun.
Yeah.
I know people really love DC nowadays because it's so dark, but maybe it's because I enjoy such a less... serious take on films like these. They're superheroes. Let them have some fun. This is just very ridiculous. This is on a new level of fun, but it's fun for the audience, not fun for them in universe.
Look, I mean, these things can all exist at the same time, you know?
Mm.
It's just if you can do it well and if you can tell a compelling story, they all can easily exist.
Right.
Like, that's why we didn't get the Snyder Cut to begin with, was they didn't want that darker brew, and they wanted to, quote-unquote, Avengerize this movie, and that made
so
it worse.
Bad.
But yeah. Now what we see what happens when you do the darker brooding, but do it in a very well-thought-out and very well-displayed movie, it works out great.
Yeah, and this I'm still bummed. Like, I'm perpetually bummed of the fact that, like, they tried something different for Snyder Cut, and Warner Brothers, whomever, did not want it. So disappointing. So disappointing.
It is, but this is basically the polar opposite of that movie, where it's just, you can't take a single thing seriously. If you do, screw, because then you're just going to be annoyed the entire goddamn time. Like, one of my neutral points where, like, it goes into the campiness of it all.
Yeah.
The mad scientist is the most cliche mad scientist of all mad scientists.
Oh, of course.
Holy crap. To the point I had to say mad scientist 3 times, because that is just, like, the bottom barrel of how much I'm actually, like, describing this guy.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Like, it was such a weird thing, where also the fact that it's so campy that even, like, the prison guards sound like villains. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yes. Yes. Like, the dialogue is so bad, and I'm like, where did they even pull this from? But I can't tell if it's because I watched it with someone else that I'm kind of like, oh, this is a fun time, too. I feel like if I watched this by myself, I would be yelling at my screen more. But I feel like, at the end of the day, this is one of those films that you should watch with other people, because you can have that back and forth about, like, did that just happen? Are we staring at Batman's butt for too long? What's going on?
No, that I completely agree, because when I was writing down all my bad points, and then my page and a half to almost 2 pages of bad.
Oh my, you have 2 pages of bad?
Almost 2 pages of bad. But I'm sitting here looking at this like, I would just want to crack jokes the entire time, but I'm watching this by myself, so I got no one to talk to besides my dog. But at the same time, I'm like, this would be really fun if I watched this with another person, and like, you had that back and forth, like, Mystery Science Theater the crap out of this movie.
Yes.
I would love it if they actually did that now, because they did bring back Mystery Science Theater not too long ago, like a couple years ago or so.
Yeah, didn't they I feel like they canceled it though.
That's upsetting.
Or I haven't seen it.
That's very unfortunate. But yes, are you saying that that was your entire one good point, or do you have a little bit more to toss in there? Because I technically only have 2 more good, and they can be easily combined.
Honestly, I just want to talk ad nauseum about how crazy the fucking puns were from Mr. Freeze.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's one of my good ones, is the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger and Uma Thurman lean into this ridiculousness so hard, it works out better.
Oh, 100%. This is one of those things where I'm rooting more for the bad guys than I am for the heroes, because I feel like they fleshed out more of the antagonists' like backstories than Batman and Robin. And I'm like, this is exactly why I thought of, like, that meme that was going around, where it's like, Mr. Freeze just wanted to cool the planet, and Poison Ivy just wanted to, like, rebuild forests for nature, and we have to root for the trust fund billionaire.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I love that meme. I have to send that to you.
That should be the goddamn cover art for this episode.
I think should be. It's really good.
That's a good point. It's like, we're worried about global warming, we're worried about messing up the rainforest. They want to solve both those problems. The only problem is, one is trying to do this by destroying an entire city for some odd reason. His plan was very confusing to me.
Yes. It's not... Okay. We're rooting for them, but like, their plans are very like big brain, but not really that much big brain.
And I'm not just saying this because it was back in like the 90s, where they don't need to flesh those things out that well. I mean, A, you should. B, it's not like recent movies has had the most fleshed out villain plots either. Mm-mm. Like, let's look at Baron Zemo in Civil War. That was ridiculous. Like, I'm like, what are you trying to accomplish here, dude? I don't know what you're doing here. It's like, you want Captain America and Iron Man to fight, but then now that you got them fighting each other, I'm good. I can die a happy death. What?
I kind of understood his, like, motivations, though.
I understood the motivation, but the execution was very questionable.
Did he appear in a different film before that? No, right?
No. This was the only one he did. They just tied it back into Age of Ultron, where his family died in Sokovia.
Right.
That was it.
Are you watching Falcon and Winter Soldier?
I am. And they're bringing him in this week.
Ooh, yes, I know.
Boy.
Or I know.
They're bringing him
excited.
In episode 3, because this will not be out this week.
Yes, you're right. They're bringing him back the week of recording.
Yes.
if y'all have Marvel thoughts, obviously, you should know we're Marvel fans, so reach out to us. We'll talk about Marvel.
I feel like we should even just do that at some point, like, just randomly just go live and just talk about it. Okay, this episode, what do y'all think? And just...
We should do that. I feel like...
We should just do that on a weekend. Just like a quick 15-minute thing. Like, we discuss what happened in that episode and just go from there and then leave it.
Yeah.
But then we have the main episode. Oh my god, why aren't we doing that before? Alright, we'll make plans later.
We'll make plans. I'm we'll, also like, let me use this on Twitch so I can, like, utilize Twitch more.
Sure. We will use all the things and all the platforms.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
But to get back to here, I loved Arnold Schwarzenegger and Uma Thurman. And also the fact that, like, even, like, looking at their former work before this movie, I'm like, I'm more of a fan of their stuff still.
Mm.
Where it's like, Arnold Schwarzenegger, obviously, you had the Terminator movies. You had
of course.
Predator. You had Conan the Barbarian. And my one of my favorite Christmas movies, Jingle All the Way.
Oh my god, like, Jingle All the Way is so good.
So good. So, like, he did all those movies before this.
Here's the funny thing, though, is that all of these movies are aligned with how campy this movie is.
Oh, absolutely. So that was another thing that they did, was they rewrote some of this movie when they realized that they were going to have Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
Oh my god.
Who was on the list for Mr. Freeze before that? I have Wikipedia here. Ed Harris, Anthony Hopkins, and Patrick Stewart were considered for the role before that. And
then, Anthony Hopkins. Oh my god. I'm sorry, Odin? Odin himself?
Odin, Professor X, and Ed Harris, because I don't know if he was in a superhero thing yet.
That name sounds so familiar and I don't remember.
I know of him. He's definitely a lot more of a serious actor. I've seen him in a lot more dramas, or, like, heard his name tied to a lot more dramas than I have comedies. The fact that this one is geared towards kids, is supposed to be really camp, supposed to be a lot more lighthearted, it makes sense to not go with him. Even Anthony Hopkins and Patrick Stewart, I haven't really seen them in anything other than, you know, either actions or dramas. And then you had Arnold Schwarzenegger, who did Kindergarten Cop. So, there you go.
Also, hold on. This. When was Twins? When was Twins with him and Danny DeVito?
I was just thinking of that movie.
I love Twins.
Literally was just thinking about that movie. Where I'm pretty sure that was 80s. All right, that's real quick. Google. Twins, the movie, was 88.
Ooh, wow. I've watched more 80s movies than I thought.
Yeah, so there was that. and also the fact that, like, out of everyone in this movie, this was my other good point, he had the best character design. I love that. Well, was a
he really
best suit.
Did. I highly agree.
Even when he didn't have that giant, like, bubble helmet that the cartoon normally has to keep him, like, cryogenically frozen.
Yeah.
His look looked great. I like what the lights are and everything. Like, it looked really dope.
I was going to say the same thing, because I truly enjoyed the intricacies of his, like, suit. And I'm like, oh, what did they use for, like, the sides of his arms or whatever? Like, did they use LEDs? Was LEDs available back in the day, you know?
That was great. I think they had to have been, right? That definitely had to have been LED, because otherwise, everything else would have been too bright otherwise, right?
Yeah, because they were using film at that point, so it's finicky.
Shit, I would love to see one person, oh my god, for the love of god, let this happen in the universe, let one person dress up as Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mr. Freeze, at a con, and just do all of his... Has it happened? I haven't seen this guy. I need to see this guy in real life. I've never seen this guy myself. Because I also want to have a conversation with the dude and hope that he does every sentence with a pun.
Yeah, they have to be, like, very quick-witted to have a pun in everything.
You have guys who come out there dressed as the Grinch, and their dialogue is spot on.
Really? What?
Like, it's paraphrased, but it's always very close to something you would hear from the Jim Carrey Grinch.
Oh, my God.
Works out really well. So if you had one guy who's that committed, that not only are you this big of a fan of this movie that you made the suit, but you're probably going to also try to lean into the dialogue of it all.
Oh my god, I need to find that, because that is the cherry on top.
I'm saying that's what I want in my life. I need to see that. But yeah, that's that was all my good points, I believe.
Okay.
Anything else you want to chime in with? With the campiness of it all before we move on?
No, I really just loved how they didn't shy away in the very opening scenes of the film, where they're just like, butt shot, belt shot. let's put on a glove. It was just so
It was very Sailor Moon of them to do the whole sequence of, like, here's this glove, now here's this glove, now here's this belt buckle.
Yeah.
So you can get a really good shot of your crotch. Like, why?
But I do have a question for you. Where is the worst place for you to get frozen? Because I was thinking about it in, like, the very end of the film. The entire city gets frozen. And in my head, I'm like, I would hate to get frozen while I'm on the toilet.
I was thinking toilet or when I'm just about to take a bite of something really hot.
Oh.
Because then it's like, I get thawed. I am just coming out of the cold, but now I have to reheat all my stuff. And I'm like, I was kind of thinking about that with the hot dog guy, where they're still exchanging money. I'm like, do you still want that? Because this is no longer a hot dog. This is just a frozen wiener at this point.
Yeah, you're going to have to put a bat. You got to make another dirty dog at that point.
I don't know. I think bathroom is definitely high up on that list as well, because you had that one dog who was about to take a piss on the hydrant.
Frozen pee.
I'm also just thinking of that one part in, like, X-Men Apocalypse, I believe, where you had that one kid, like, going in for, like, the first kiss, and this girl just has a look on her face of sheer terror. But this is during the X-Mansion explosion sequence. Quicksilver's tossing him aside and, like, stopping this moment from happening. I can just imagine if that was the real thing, where it's like, you're about to go in for the first kiss, one person does not want to see this, but then you're just looking at each other face to face for a while.
Oh.
Because I'm assuming that consciousness is still there, and you can still, like, frozen moments in these things are always just so questionable to me. Like,
oh, yeah.
The logistics of it
here,
all.
Here it is, logistics.
It's like, how are you breathing? How is this happening? What's going on here? Like,
okay, maybe this is leans into bad points, but I think it's hilarious that they're like, you only have 11 minutes.
Yeah, the timing of that whole thing. So they set it up in the very, very beginning of the movie, where it's like,
oh, yeah.
You can either chase me down or thaw him. Either way, you have 11 minutes to decide.
God.
And then they use that later on, where the entire city gets frozen over. We have less than 11 minutes to thaw the city. Weren't those two scientists frozen way before this? So they're
dead.
Them hanging on the side of this telescope should not be happening.
Oh my God. Ugh, I have so many problems with those two scientists.
I have so many problems with a lot of things.
All right, let's go. Let's go.
I'm going to try to fine point some of the logistical things, because obviously a lot of these things are going to be logistical problems.
Right.
This one's actually a little bit more of a storytelling thing, and I guess this is where I'm going to go back to my point earlier of, I wanted to rewatch Batman Forever, the one with Val Kilmer, the one where we see Crystal Dowell come in as Robin to begin with. I felt like there was a lot of really forced tension between the two, and it did not make sense why it was there. Like, first of all, you're naming this movie Batman and Robin, and, like, I understand there's always going to be, like, a little bit of tension, like, a little bit of a power struggle, I guess, especially when you have such an old kind of Robin instead of just a kid who's going to be listening. Right. But the only reason they had tension was because of Poison Ivy. But, like, they also harped on, you're being way too overprotective. Like, you gotta trust me, this isn't that. And then there's never a point where things really come to a head where this needs to happen.
Right.
They just get over things somehow. But the way they get over things is literally just Bruce manipulating the situation.
He it's like, truly,
I will trust you. But yeah, you use his words against him to be like, I want you to trust me now. It is still your way, though.
Yeah. I think I even called it out when I was watching, where I was like, dude, you emotionally manipulated your partner by saying exactly what he wanted to hear, but, like, and almost using the exact same phrasing as him. So I'm like, is it resolved?
Not really.
Are you over it?
Even in that final fight or whatever it was, there wasn't really that much trust there either.
Right.
Where, I guess it's another one of my bad points, so I'm not going to talk about it right now, but there was no extra moment where they're in a really critical time and Robin's like, I got this, trust me, I know it's risky, but I can do this. There was never a point like that again. It was still just the one note of that. So that was bothersome, where it's like, we're gonna call this Batman and Robin, but let them barely be on the same page together, and you're actually gonna have a lot more of a character arc and dynamic between Bruce and Alfred than you did with Robin this entire time. So that was just very confusing to me.
I hear you. I agree.
Yeah, what do you got on yours? I'm curious about, because yours always changes. Like, I always have the running thing of just logistical things, and I'm like, I'll nitpick about a couple stuff. But A, you haven't done CGI in a while.
I know.
I'm not sure if you're going to bring it up on this time, because it's a 90s movie where I'm just like, okay, this is what we got.
No, absolutely not. Because, like, for me, the visuals of this movie were really good, but I was paying attention to their costumes. All of these are practical costumes that they've built.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah, they really are. I think the most like CGI or whatever they've used is really just the scenes like that are so ridiculous, like at the top of the film where they're surfing through the sky.
Oh, don't even get me started with that whole thing.
We're not gonna make you have additional bad points,
yeah.
But
yeah, what do you?
I don't know where to begin. I really don't know where to begin. Maybe this is a 90s thing.
Okay.
My eyes were in so much pain during this movie. There's so much flashing. There needs to be a flashing warning.
I made that joke too. I'm like, this should really come with a warning about potential epilepsy.
Seriously.
Seizures, because there are so many colors and so much neon.
Yeah.
Tossed into this movie. It was concerning.
I didn't even have my monitor up like very like bright, and it was still at times like very painful to watch. I'm not at risk for epilepsy, but like my eyes were not happy.
Yeah. Speaking of colors though, I was very intrigued by those villains who get kicked out of their lair by.
Yes.
Their makeup was phenomenal.
That was really
well done. I'm like, seriously. I wanted more of them at some point. I'm like, I don't need this much Barbara. As much as I like Alicia Silverstone back in the day, I wanted more of them than I did of her.
Oh, legit. Again, this just goes back into like the fact that they do a lot of like really good practical stuff. Like the makeup is great. I will have to say maybe like not so much with like Bane, but like Bane might be like my one pain point in like their logistics of costumes.
Yeah,
but,
he was a bit rough. I was pretty transfixed with Uma Thurman's eyebrows a couple times where she had where she had like the petals rather than just like the drawn on parts.
Yes.
I was very intrigued by that. And actually one of the people who did some of the visual effect makeup on this was from that show Face Off, was one of the judges.
Oh,
V.
Wow.
Neal, who also did the makeup for Robin Williams in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh,
that's
my
why
God,
all
that's
that shit was that
thing.
Good.
Wow,
because she was behind part of that. So it makes sense.
That is legit.
Not experts, but I knew stuff.
I mean, any knowledge is good knowledge.
Knowledge is power.
Oh, truly.
And power is money, and money is pizza.
Money is pizza. Oh my God. What the fuck?
It's a line from Parks and Rec.
Why do I not? Okay, it's been so long since I've watched Parks and Rec. My goddamn. All right, so Batman, bad for our eyes. We keep going off
hard,
track today.
Hard twist back at.
We
look,
have to. We've been so bad tonight.
We did a really good job. The last recording of Staying on Track, where we got everything in with like a half hour. But, I mean, in all fairness, though, we are two bad points in, one apiece, so we're doing a pretty good job, too.
All right.
They're at least fun sidetracks. And we squashed a couple off, though. We're doing
that's
good.
True, that's true, good. That's true.
We're getting better. Good job. Good job, partner.
Let's go. Go all team. Right.
Great ball movement all around. Okay, I'm done. yes, more to the bad points. What can I actually talk about for decent amount of time? I definitely want to end on this last point that I made. So I guess the problem for me was, and I kind of mentioned it earlier in the fight choreography, again, it's more like a dance. It's really quick. Like, I've seen more fight choreography in like a Power Rangers episode than I did this entire Batman movie.
Oh God.
And it kind of also boiled down to like, how did all the villains go down? How did they all get defeated? And each one was kind of just really lame.
I mean, does that lean into the fact that it is a cheesy as fuck movie, though?
I don't know. So my whole thing is, like, the only one that really made sense, where, like, he was definitely defeated, was Bane.
Right.
He took out the thing that was giving him the power. Like, he was getting injected by the suit constantly. It's on circulation. You cut off the circulation, he deflates. He is no longer a problem. That's the only one that made sense, but it was also incredibly anticlimactic.
Yeah. And then they just left him there.
Yeah. But also, in my mind, this dude has been punching through walls the entire time. How were your necks not broken at this point?
Yeah.
So, logistical problem, whatever. Can't have the sidekicks get murdered and just leave it at that.
They're kind of important, you know, if they were a third film.
Sort of. They were supposed to be.
Again, that's what I'm saying. Like,
it was supposed to be Batman Unchained, and then the villain.
Unchained?
Yeah, the villain was supposed to be Scarecrow, played by a guy who made a cameo in this movie, Coolio.
Oh, rip, Coolio.
He was supposed to be the next big bad.
I am upset because Coolio is such a staple in 90s things.
It really was.
My brain really said, I really thought that he was in all that, and I don't know why.
No. You want to know why? Because he did the theme song to Keenan and Kel.
Oh, that's what it is.
So that is, I will give you that flub because you got two guys covered from that show. That makes sense. Because like at the end of their opening sequence, they're sitting on that big orange couch.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Again, I'm still pretty big sure 90s, man.
I'm still pretty sure I could do that entire theme song if I really tried.
That's a bonus episode.
I feel like I could.
That is a bonus episode.
Yes, but getting back to these villains. Again, I mean, you have a lot of these people at the height of their popularity in the 90s. You have Uma Thurman coming off of Pulp Fiction. You got Arnold Schwarzenegger doing his thing with almost every movie under the sun.
You could not avoid Arnold.
Yeah.
Like, it's hilarious.
You really couldn't, which was phenomenal. I mean, good on him. The fact that this dude speaks broken-ass English and he's doing a really good job getting some roles.
My one worry for him perpetually, because I don't know his journey very well, where I'm like, I really hope they didn't, like, exploit him in any way. Because, of course, he's an immigrant, and, like, he doesn't speak English very well. So I'm like, I really hope he, like, kept in his power for...
Probably could have been a little bit exploited in the beginning. Mm. Like, I'm pretty sure he was on a sitcom, like, Lucille Ball at some point, or, like, he was, like, this Austrian masseuse.
So I mean, you don't start from somewhere, too.
Oh, no, you always start somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, by the time he got to, like, Predator and Terminator, I'm pretty sure he was making the big bucks at that point.
I don't know if... Okay, this is, like, my one, like, kernel of knowledge of, like, sports. But, like, if you watch The Last Dance on ESPN, the journey of, like, the
90s... Oddly enough, I did not, even though I was the biggest fan of, like, the 90s Bulls, you know?
Oh, my God.
The whole era.
Okay, so... Oh, again, this is the peak of my sports fandom, but what was it? It was Scottie Pippen who got fucked over because of his, like, very long-term contract with the Bulls, and then he was, like, one of the top players, but he was also, like, one of the least paid players because of how crappy his contract was.
Oh, I didn't know that bit. I knew he struggled going from, like, the number two to the number one spot on the team.
Yeah.
And there was always that power dynamic where, like, I think he got pissed off that, like, a really big play. They're like, okay, we're going to set this up for Tony Kukoc to get the shot instead of you. I'm like, this is my team now. Dora's not here. This is my team. And he got salty about that. That part I remember. I didn't know about the contract thing, though.
Yeah. I highly recommend watching The Last Dance. I know I'm giving, like, recommendations in the middle of something else, but... As somebody who's, like, very nostalgic about the 90s Bulls, it was very interesting to watch just seeing their dynamic from the inside, because it was almost like an unfiltered look at the Bulls during, like, this era, and, like, the film crew was given all access to them, and they cut it very well, and it was very interesting to see how nostalgic Jordan gets too.
That's been on my list for a long time. I knew they were, like, rolling out, like, a couple episodes at a time, and I was waiting for them to all be out. They're all on Netflix. They've been on Netflix for a long time now, and I just haven't gotten around to it. I'm not a big documentary guy.
Yeah.
That is second on my list behind Be Like Water.
Oh, I don't know that one.
They did one on ESPN for Bruce Lee.
Oh.
So that's high on my list. Ooh. That's a lot higher on my list than it is The Last Dance.
Maybe I'll watch that one next.
I'm not sure where to find that now. I mean, I'll look it up another time, but.
Probably ESPN.com.
Yeah, for sure. But yes.
But yeah, shit. 90s okay. nostalgia. Oh my God.
This is going to be a lot of crap to cut around. I got to finish my point of, like, okay, so. Arnold Schwarzenegger, he gets defeated because you warmed his heart, I guess. Like, the fuck?
So he's in jail, but also now still working on research. And I'm like, that's not how jail works.
I think it's one of those things where he's under their radar, almost like their Suicide Squad. You're going to get time off of your sentence if you help the greater good. He is essentially trying to cure a disease. If you can figure it out, because you're pretty much 90% of the way there, you figure this out, time served. Good job.
I guess, but, like, again, that's, like, a stretch. We're, like, justifying things that weren't said in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, this is every one of these movies, because there's enough plot holes where you kind of just have to connect the dots yourself. But I don't even remember how he got defeated, really. Like, I just remember him on his back. Oh, he got the freaking heater thing put onto his body.
Yep.
So he just starts melting, literally. And then he's incapacitated. I mean,
he's just laying on his back.
It made sense. But insanely anticlimactic.
Yeah, that whole fight, like, between them in a small amount of space was kind of cool, but then he just gets, like, flipped out, and goodbye.
I mean, it was cool-ish. It was one of those things where, why are you monologuing when you, like, surprise attack him? He's setting up this telescope, you pop up in the front of the screen, literally say, like, a two-part line, and then punch him in the face. Mm-hmm. Batman. How did you not stop him somewhere, like, mid-sentence? Or why didn't you hit him first, Mr. Freeze, and then say your line? Why is it in this order? It didn't make sense.
I feel like it just goes back into, like, the tropes of, like, we have to have them monologue for a little bit. It's just the way for, like, lack of a better... Yes.
This is the way.
It's just movie tropes up until that point.
Yeah.
And I love that we've gotten to the point of, like, comedy and in general that it gets meta and we can make fun of it, because I love that type of humor, too.
Oh, yeah. But I think the one that didn't make sense the most out of all of them was how Poison Ivy went down. I mean, first of all, again, you missed a chance to kill Robin, where it's like, you kissed him, peels it off, rubber lips, didn't work. You just peeled off the rubber lips. You could have just kissed him again.
Thank you.
You got Batman hogtied, then you get kicked in the face by Barbara. You get kicked in the face by Barbara. I know, I am slurring my words a lot. That's why I'm repeating certain lines because I realize, like, I do that a lot in the recordings, where it's actually sometimes it's almost inaudible, so I gotta repeat myself. So I'm keeping that in my head.
Have you seen What We Do in the Shadows? I'm sorry, we're sidetracking.
I haven't seen that yet, no.
Oh my god, please.
No, you mentioned the show. I still haven't watched it yet. No. Jeremy Clement, right?
Not Jeremy. Jermaine. Yeah, Jermaine Clement and Brett McKenzie. The reason why I say that is I think in Flight of the Conchords there is a character named Bra-Bra, who is played by hilariously Kristen Wiig, and also she was Barbara in Wonder Woman 1984, and it's just like an entire scene of her just trying to say her name, and like the two dudes from New Zealand are just like, your name is Barbara, and she's like, no, it's Bra-Bra.
Bra-Bra. God damn it. I can even go into another like sidetrack of how shit I am with names, but we've already seen this throughout this podcast of me not always messing up one person.
Gal Gadot?
Joel Schumacher? No, Schumacher? Like, what? Mr. Fantastic? I'm not even gonna try with him anymore. Like, I've given up on
that. Oh, let's not start there. That's hard.
But let's get to Uma Thurman, a name I can say, where so she gets kicked in the face, right? She gets launched into her flower bed where she was just sitting with Robin, but that's how she gets trapped.
Right.
She gets squished, and now her legs are flailing in the background, and apparently she is defeated. A, the fuck. B, you had enough time to look up and say the most cliche thing from the 1950s, like, superhero whatever, like, Batman things. Curses! Close down. I'm like, really? Like, this... What is that? Why?
I love that you don't love that.
Like, this is so ridiculous.
My one frustration is that at the time, I thought she died. So by the time we got to the end of the film, I was like, wait, she survived? She was just down?
No, it would make more sense if she actually got consumed and then we realized, oh, that's how she was finished.
Right. But
that was your lounge chair that trapped you. Why would it? Aren't you the plant whisperer? Shouldn't you be able to just kind of tickle this little like palm fronds, whatever, and then it should open back up and the fight continues?
Dude, no. Freaking logistics.
It didn't make sense. Especially that one. That one bugged the crap out of me. Where I'm like, are you just trying to show off Batgirl and that she's actually useful? The fact that she defeated her while you guys were out of commission. At the same time, you could, like, Batman could have died three different ways as well.
Yeah. I was gonna say, this leans into, like, my bad point of, like, there's so much plot armor and convenience where, that was the big one for me, was just that the kiss with Ivy, she just took it off in front of her. She could have just gone back.
Surprise attack.
Going into that, too, I was just so frustrated with, like, the two scientists where it was just like, oh, they're, like, the one POC representation in the film
besides Coolio. They really were.
All right, Coolio doesn't exist. Coolio's not here, but like,
no, there was one other person of color. Vivica A. Fox was in this movie for a second, but we never see her again after that one scene.
Right. I was like, I was excited to see Vivica A. Fox, and also hilariously Kill Bill.
Why didn't they have another actually I kind of wish that they brought that up in Kill Bill, because this happened before that movie, but they never interact in the movie, so it makes sense that they wouldn't.
I guess, but I mean, they have, like, Mr. Freeze or something.
Right, wouldn't it have been hysterical if, like, in the middle of their fight in the kitchen, she pulls out an ice pick from the freezer, Uma Thurman picks up a potted plant, and they're about to square off with these
things. Yes. I'm pretty sure freaking Quentin Tarantino probably thought about that, but he didn't want to lean into that too hard.
Like, let's pitch it, see if they want to do it, because they do have the right to be like, no, I'm not shooting that. Like, yeah. I want to forget that is on my IMDb page. Let's move on.
This is what I'm doing. But,
the two scientists, yes, continue.
Again, it leans into plot armor for me, where I'm just like, they're really bad with representation. And then also at the same time, like, how did they survive? They're multiple, like, freezing. They fell from the sky. They've gone through so much trauma. I'm just like, why did they keep hanging on the thing when maybe they could have survived if they just kind of, like, climbed down a little bit?
I also kind of thought it should have just been Darwinism at that point. Y'all should have just died. This dude,
yeah, but they're scientists.
No, but look, this dude barges in here, decked out in chrome, glowing whatever around you, big-ass gun in his arms, followed by the biggest bruiser during the 90s, besides Goro from Mortal Kombat, and yet you're gonna stand there, who are you guys? And then get shot with an ice gun, and the other chick just stands there and screams, sees him pointing at her, how did you not run away at this point? Other people ran away during that freaking gala. You see them get frozen, you get the hell out of there. No, but apparently you were frozen in fear to get frozen literally.
Yeah, bad times.
It should have been Darwinism. Where, 11 minutes is over, buddy. Sorry.
So bad. Like, and it's so disappointing to, like, see that be representation for, like, two, like, very vast and different, like, people of color. It's so...
Yep, and at no point did we get anyone who was Hispanic, so they still missed the mark.
Of course.
At least this passes the Bechdel test. We got that much, at least.
Did it pass the Bechdel test? I'm surprised.
Yeah. Females interact with other females. You have more than two. Right, that's the main criteria. You have more than two females with speaking roles, and then they have to interact with each other.
No, there's one additional
What's the other
point?
What's the third one?
The additional point is that they have to be able to talk about something that has nothing to do with a man.
I mean, if you can consider fight banter, was that about men, or was that just them riffing?
I don't
riffing?
Know. Somebody fact check for us. I'm calling out a fact checker.
I mean, they do mention Mr. Freeze, the fact that it was like the whole like, oh, I'm a one moment show, blah, blah, blah moment. That was during that moment. But I don't think it was always just about the men of it all.
This will be a Google for later.
Wait, does the conversation have to be between the two, have to be not about a man?
Yeah, okay, this will be
right, this is a good Google. This is a good
Okay. One. For like clarity's sake too, the Bechdel test also fails like people of color. So, it's not, like, the most straightforward, but this is the most
And also, at the same time, I'm not, like, it's not always, like, the biggest thing for me to be, like, this has to pass this to be a good movie.
Right.
You know? Because there are plenty of movies where, like, you guys did a fantastic job of storytelling and everything else. Like, my favorite Disney Pixar movie, Up, does not, because there is literally two females in this entire movie. But that is a phenomenal fucking movie. I love it so much.
I mean, now that I think about it, I'm sad because you're right. I also really love Up, but I'm like, oh shit, they really, that's kind of disappointing.
It is a little disappointing. I'm like, but it's such a good movie that it's fine, you know?
The rules are it has to have at least two named women in it who talk to each other.
Check.
And it has to be about something besides a man.
And then questionably check. I don't know if that third one works.
Oh, no. Okay, so it only passed 2 out of 3 tests.
Oh, so that whole fight banter was, I guess, predominantly about the men. Got it.
So it's kind of, like, iffy. Somebody says, Poison Ivy deals a threat. Gossip Gertie informs her that Batman and Robin protect Gotham. And then somebody else disagreed with this rating, saying, for a few brief lines, Batgirl and Poison Ivy discuss feminism. Okay, so somebody did say that they talk to each other. They talk while brawling in the obligatory chick fight.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but I do remember that whole thing of, like, that is what prompted her to say, this is a one-woman show. But yeah, either way.
Somebody, again, fact check for us.
There you go. Maybe that could just be a future good point. If we're ever really struggling, does it pass this test? Yes, it does. Okay, we're good. Does it actually have decent representation? Yeah, it does. Okay, we're good. If we're that struggling to get something good out of something, keep that in your back pocket.
I gotta find the, like, updated version of this test that's, like, more inclusive. Okay, but, like, is it my turn for bad? Because this leans for this.
I think you were midpoint for this.
Oh, was I midpoint?
This was still point number 2.
Oh, rip. Okay. But yeah, I guess that's it. My point was bad representation for POC and plot armor.
Plot armor, that's what it was.
Yeah.
It was a plot armor that was the big problem. And you stem that into the two scientists specifically. Okay.
All right, so it's you. Okay.
Okay, so this is my third. This is my most annoying one. Again, bringing up the fact that this movie is called Batman and Robin. Robin is completely useless in this movie.
Except for fighting, that's it.
No, not even. Like, he handled a couple goons. That was it. I even wrote down the list of where he failed. He had one saving moment where he saved Barbara during that motorbike race, and that was it. That was the one time you actually saved someone without someone else's assistance or being saved yourself. He was frozen by Mr. Freeze in the beginning of the movie. He was seduced by Poison Ivy to the point where he fights Batman for her, where he gets flipped into a vat of ice cream and then they escape. So again, another fail. He gets pushed into the moat after the kiss and the rubber lip thing. He is out of the fight somehow because apparently the dude can't swim with a cape on.
I thought he was being subdued by
he was trapped by a seaweed or something. Crap. All right. Yeah. Either way, completely useless in that fight.
Can I also just say, I want to add just like one scene that particularly bothered me. It's the scene where they're chasing after Freeze. And then Batman's just like, you can't make the jump. And he's like, I can make the jump.
Yeah.
And then, like, he almost dies. Like, Batman just says, fuck you at that point.
Yeah. Well, again, because he probably realized how worthless he was, too. Who knows?
But family, Joby. But family.
This isn't Fast and the Furious, all right? That can't be the only line that works. That can't be the driving force to justify these things. Fuck that.
Yeah, but that's the thread in this film. There's so many threads of family.
Oh, yeah, because it's family. I don't know. Either way. Oh, another fail moment where he gets flipped by Barbara. That was just another little side note, which shows that, all right, she's already definitely stronger than your ass. But
so she's more useful.
She saves him while they're falling from the telescope because his line snaps and he has that whole line. He's like, I got you. Misses. Nope. I got you. And she's like the big, strong, like woman to save the day. Again, he failed. He kind of defeats Bane, but again, with her help. So half a point.
No, see, that's, like, not fair because he did get, like, the swipe at Bane's, like, lines. It felt like he got the lines more.
Didn't she do that, too? But it was, like, both on the same side?
So, they both did it, but he did it first, and then she did it afterwards.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so you figured out how to defeat him, and she helped. So, it's half a point to your already negative five. So,
negative five.
Yeah, and then at the end of the movie, it's time to thaw the city. And it's like, oh, we need a computer genius to figure out how to do this. It's like, I got this. No, you don't. She figured out all this stuff. Not only that, but also flipped the screen so you didn't have to do this thing upside down. She did literally everything. And then he was still patronizing to her. Where he was like, oh, yeah, you're pretty good, little girl. Like, you didn't do anything this entire movie. The shut the fuck up.
All he has is his title, and that's it.
And then the entire time, he was just a fucking whiny incel energy of like, you're just mad because she likes me more.
I never understood that because...
He said that line like five times.
Okay, yes, he said that line five times. You know what I didn't understand? Bruce had a girl, like, he was dating someone. So I'm like, what are you talking about?
I don't know. The whole pheromone thing with the dust and everything, that was... really confusing, where it works on the goons really quick, really easily, and really effectively. When it gets to Batman and Robin, you hit them with three hits of this stuff, and they're still, like, kind of fighting this off for some reason.
I did not understand. It's like because they're super. That's it. They're supers.
Sorta, sure.
But they're still people. Like, they don't have power.
Like, it not working on Mr. Freeze, that made more sense because he was, like, kind of, like, chemically altered and stuff like that.
Right.
Maybe it just didn't penetrate. But for them, it would have been a lot better as a character arc or, like, even just to show, hey, we're figuring out how to beat you guys. Of, we got tricked with this dust. Oh, hey, it's still in our suits. Let's take this chemical sample, figure out an antidote. Maybe we'll ingest this or, like, take, like, a little puffer or something like that. To get us out of it.
They have to take an inhaler.
Yeah, take a goddamn inhaler or something to wash off the dust to stop the effects. And that would make more sense of why she has to do this multiple times or it's not as effective or what have you. That never happens either.
You just have to assume. Yeah. It just goes back to plot armor, Joby. Like, things are just very convenient.
Yeah. But yeah, for you to be the second name, the title character of this movie, you didn't do shit, bro. Like, you didn't do anything.
I cannot believe that we got more Alfred than I feel like we did. Yeah,
we absolutely did. And again, like, there was more of like a connection between Bruce and Alfred, where he's seeing all these flashbacks of like the tender moments that Alfred was there watching over him like a guardian. Now to see him on his deathbed, but that was just like a really weird thing to toss in there. Of like, did you already know that he was dying? Did you see
what was happening?
And that's why you're thinking of these things, or what is? I don't know. That's why I wanted to watch Batman Forever, where I wanted to see the dynamic there.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of those things where I also want to go back. Also, I enjoyed this so much that I feel like I want to just like sit down and just veg out and watch the stuff.
I also really want to see, and this is why I said we were going to do Batman and Robin and not Batman Forever, because again, another moment of where the villains were a lot more compelling. What I do remember of that movie was Jim Carrey was dope as a Riddler. He was just off his fucking rocker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, basically, take the mask, who's like a 10, you put him at an 8, and that's basically the Riddler. Because Jim Carrey's dope. And again, peak 90s. Good job, buddy. But then also, Tommy Lee Jones as like a mob gangster, as Two-Face.
I can't believe Tommy Lee Jones is in that. Is this the one that has Danny DeVito in it? Is that the one?
No, the one with Danny DeVito is...
Is that Michael Batman Keaton's Batman?
It's Batman Returns.
Damn it.
So that was the one with Penguin and Catwoman. Oh.
Somebody betrayed me telling me that it's the George Clooney ones that has Penguin. And I'm like, fuck.
No.
I just wanted to see our Lord and Savior Danny DeVito.
No, I went Michael Keaton against Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Right.
Then Keaton against Penguin and Catwoman. Val Kilmer against Two-Face and the Riddler. And then George Clooney.
Clooney.
Against Bane, Ivy, and Freeze. Sorta.
It was a very weird team up. It's still a very weird team up.
Yeah. It was a choice. But yes, your final bad point, if you will.
Okay. All right. This is like the lightest bad point. Why are there so many one-off gangs in this film?
I'm curious about that too, a little bit.
So it's like at the very beginning, you have the ice skating gang. I think they come back though, because that's Freeze's like henchmen.
They come back again during the gala, but then it was like you saw those other two guys get blown up when they missed the jump off the hand, and then that was the last time we ever see them. They're not even there for the final fight in the telescope. Or like, dude, you could have had more help. Again, another way,
Yom
could have won. Like, the villains definitely could have won in this movie. Let's be honest.
Again, rooting for the villains. For
plot armor.
Truly. I know we touched upon this in the good points, but like, the gang that Ivy kicked out of their realm, I don't know what the word is right now.
Their lair.
Lair.
Their hideout. Whatever.
Sorry, Lair.
These words you're good. You're good.
Those folks wanted to see more of them. What happened to them? And there was a third gang, and I can't remember. I think it was the biker gang.
Oh yeah, during the Fast and Furious scene.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
There's just so many gangs, and I'm like, there's so many side characters, but you choose gangs?
I don't know. Like, this is the first time I remember where it was a lot less of him solving the problems of the Gotham streets. Being the vigilante in that respect, and him just dealing straight up with like a big problem. Right, the commissioner's like direct line to your car phone, have the conversation, and then you're off saving the day. It was a really weird thing where there was a lot of like flashing lights here, freaking like weird spotlight of like a glowing like face going across this building, marking your territory somehow. Like, what is this?
Marking your territory.
I don't understand what the hell it was either. Or like, how do you have this one tunnel that's going to like a warehouse and everything looks like you're in a giant rave, dude?
Were raves popular in the 90s? It kind of makes sense.
I don't know. I mean, we had all that techno music, like What Is Love, and
That's true.
And things like that. Let's watch Rat at the Roxbury at some point, and then I'm pretty sure all that music would have really fit in during a rave. I'm pretty sure they're still used now during EDM concerts.
Everything is resampled into music now. For sure. So
But Laura knows there's plenty of that in this one. And again, a lot of logistical things, just small things here and there. But like we talked about before, if we took it a lot less seriously, look at it from a kid's perspective, or look at it as the 1950s, really slapstick.
Cheesy, campy
type of movie. It fits that trope. It fits that vibe.
Yeah, and that's why I really didn't hate the film. It was maybe one of the least painful films we've watched so far.
Oh, so that was actually something we forgot to do with Justice League. Where does this fall in our hierarchy?
This is like pretty high up there for me. I feel like this is very rewatchable. So this, I'm gonna save the 10 for like something golden, but like this is probably like an 8 or a 9.
The 10 for me right now out of this list has been Snyder Cut. I want to give it a, I want to give it a 10 right off the jump though. Minimal at 8. Really good push for a 9 though. That was so good.
Okay, so yes, Snyder Cut for me. Sorry, the 9 or the 10 was for Batman and Robin, not for Snyder Cut.
Wow, what?
It's just so funny. It's one of those things that I will rewatch maybe like every couple of like years. Okay, you know how you're like, if it's just on in the background, I'll put it on and I'll watch it. This is that film for me.
Interesting.
Because it's just so funny.
Those kinds of movies for me did not crack into like 7 above.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't put that there. I will put this one around like 6.
Okay.
Like, that's fine. Again, it wasn't horrible. It wasn't as bad as other ones. I feel like it's logistical plot holes aside, looking at it super campy, like, you know, like having to reframe your brain in that respect. It was definitely better than something like Green Lantern or, I'm going to say
Fantastic
it's like a
5. Four?
I would say it's like a 5. It's along the same lines as Fantastic Four.
Okay.
I'm going to give that a 5. That's fine.
Okay. I'm just like ranking Batman and Robin really high up there because it's just not a serious film. So maybe I kind of like want to restructure where like Fantastic Four goes because I feel like it would probably be higher.
We can.
It would probably be like an 8%.
I think that'd be a good thing to do at the very end. I'm actually really compiling a small list of like something to talk about and like maybe like a season ender. We do our final film and then we have like a little bonus episode of like here's some like running things that we've done throughout this whole process. Some things that I've noticed, especially listening to this audio over and over again. Yeah, I think that'd be good that we can revisit that list.
Oh, hell yeah. All right, wait. To go back into Snyder Cut. Snyder Cut for me, it leans higher, but it's not that high. Like, you will have to, like, force me to watch this damn movie. Like, it's not one of those ones that I'll put in the background and I'll, like, tune out. You have to pay attention to this movie. So this might actually lean towards, like, 6.5, 7.
Okay.
Where it's, like, it's a good film. But the problem is this is too long. Yeah. Like, it's just too long.
I think that's what kind of pushes it down a notch or two for me as well. Because one of the criteria for a 10 for me is definitely watchability. Can I put this in the background? Can I toss this on and enjoy myself and be completely fine with spending this amount of time during it? And that is my one problem. Even though the movie runs really well, it moves very well. It's still 4 hours.
Yeah.
You have to dedicate time for something like this. So,
I mean, you have the breakdown of like what each part is like, and you can break it up into a mini series, but at the same time, it's like, I don't want it to be
it's
a mini series.
It's still
like,
tough to get to that point. So I think that's one of the notches that kind of drops down for me. And also just another, like maybe like minus half a point for how salty I am that this is potentially the end of the road.
You have such a sliver of hope, and I'm like, Joby, revisit this in like 3 years. Like, I just don't think that they have any plans to do it right now. Don't have hope.
If there was one thing I've learned about my life, about myself in this past year, is I have problems of letting go of things. Very much so. Not gonna get into that, but I got problems. I know I do. This one seems a lot less harmless, so I'm gonna hold on a little bit longer.
I don't know, man. You shouldn't trust Warner Brothers. Like, I just feel like they're not good at, like, at least...
Decision-making?
Yeah, they're not good at decision-making for the DCEU. Watch something else. Watch the Harley Quinn series. That shit is fun.
I haven't tried that one yet. That's a good point. And my friend just recommended that I should watch Titans, the live-action Titans.
Really? I heard that that was not great.
This guy has yet to steer me wrong. He was, like, my nerdy buddy at one of my jobs back in the day, so I trust his judgment. I'll give it a shot. But, I mean, I also want to rewatch the first season of Doom Patrol and get into season 2 of it all. That shit was...
Ooh, I haven't seen that.
Where it was a really interesting choice to have, like, the 3 big names / faces that people would recognize in the series. Brendan Fraser, Matt Bomer, and Timothy Dalton. You have...
Hold on, what?
Those 3 are in the series.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, how did I miss Matt Bomer?
You want to know why? Because
him.
Brendan Fraser's a robot. Matt Bomer is like a burn victim / invisible dude. So he's just always cased in bandages.
Oh,
and you see him in like flashbacks as himself. And Timothy Dalton's in half the first season because he gets captured at some point. Spoilers.
Oh my god.
So like the big 3 names that you had first, you basically just don't even see their faces. I'm like, that's a
bold
strategy.
Wow, I never knew that.
Oh,
also,
and Alan Tudyk.
Damn.
And Alan Tudyk as the villain. Fuck. Like,
oh,
I love Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk as a villain? That's
yeah.
perfect for him.
He's so good. He's such a good actor. I love Alan Tudyk. I actually missed his show tonight for this recording. There isn't an Alien season finale was tonight.
Oh, I'm gonna watch sorry. That tomorrow.
That's okay. No, I'm actually probably gonna watch this when we get off this call.
Yeah, that's fine.
Ice my neck and watch some Resident Alien and hope I don't laugh too hard because it will hurt my neck.
No more injuries for you, please. That would be great.
No promises. Occupational hazard.
But yeah, I guess.
Martial arts school. So yeah, definitely occupational hazard.
True.
So I think that's everything. Any other final thoughts? Oh, wait, no. You were still talking about where this word Justice League stands.
Regular Justice League?
Yeah, so we talked about Batman and Robin, where that one is on the list. Snyder Cut, where that's on that list. We gotta do Weedverse. We gotta. That's what started the whole thing. That is the actual bad movie.
Oh my god, I can't believe we had to go through like decades of this shit. Can I give that like a flat out zero?
Ooh, really?
The fact that I watched it twice, I'm like, that's too much time that I've already spent on it. I want to give it a flat out zero. I never want to relive that shit ever again.
All right. I mean, if a zero is, I never want to see this ever again.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four, 2014, is on that list. 2015, I mean, is down there. And yes, I
think you gave it like a one or a two.
I gave it like a two. And I think I will replace the two with Justice League. No. I'm gonna say
we can have doubles. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that's a three because I had Elektra at two.
All
right. I had Elektra at three, so I'm gonna bump. I'm gonna flip those around. Elektra's a three. Justice League's a three. Whedon version is a three. There's still that one scene of Aquaman on the Lasso of Truth that I actually really liked.
That cannot save an entire film. One scene to save an entire film.
The freaking 3 minutes of Shang Tsung and Elektra saved that movie for me. So.
Oh my god. I guess.
That scene was fun. There's a couple redeeming qualities-ish to that film. Where are my fucking notes for this movie? Hold on. what did I say in this shit? I don't even remember what I said, the good parts. I know, Jeremy Irons was good too. I liked him.
I guess. Yeah, he had a great performance. Like, we had random, like, good performances.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, it's not enough for me.
Wasn't enough to justify watching again.
Yeah, I, like, never want to watch this film ever again. Because it's just so poorly done. And, like, there's nothing to look forward to after it. This is, like, bad. But, like, I know everyone rips on Rian Johnson's Star Wars. But I'm, like,
The Last Jedi.
Give me the next film. Like, yes, it's slow. I won't critique it until I watch the last film. Yeah. And I heard the last film is, like, trying to undo everything that
he
did.
You not seen that one?
I refuse to watch it. It's so, I heard it's so bad. Like, I'm a very casual Star Wars fan. I feel like the only thing that I truly love is The Mandalorian, because it's so tight, but
that's like, the thing that my dad and I bond over is Star Wars. Like, we've seen pretty much every movie come out at the same time. Like, opening weekend, we've seen each one since episode one.
Because that's
in 2000. So we watched those three movies. We watched Rogue One together. We watched all of Mandalorian. So that's been our running thing. So that's been fun.
I mean, my mom and I do that too. She and I have done at least just like the films, but like we haven't had the time to watch the last two. And I'm just like, I can't dedicate more time.
It was such a weird thing to do, to go from one creator to another, to go back.
You're weird, but they do that in like Avengers. Like, they do switch.
I mean, they do, but at the same time, like, again, you have the Kevin Feige of it all, where it's like, we're gonna have this overarching guy to make sure that everything works together. Where, like, if you want to just look at Avengers movies, we had Joss Whedon do two, we had the Russo brothers do with all the two.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you have that running story where there is the connection, and it's not like we are undoing one thing with a justification in another. Like, WandaVision didn't just completely undo Pietro. It just flipped it on its head and did something different, you know? Right. So I think in that respect, I'm okay with it. But, you know, it kind of felt like J.J. Abrams had, like, a vision of, like, all three. Didn't get the second one, so he had, like, a speed bump. But he was like, I want to continue my story, but now I have to deal with this. So how can we still connect the dots? That's how it kind of...
And that's why I don't really want to finish that series, because that just sounds like a complete disappointment. As much as I enjoyed watching, like, the original Star Wars, like, those were a fun time.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars is one of those franchises where it's a very polarizing fan base.
Oh, 100%. I hope you never look at the discourse online. Oh, I never
do.
It's so bad.
I never do. Even within our friend group, like, I know I have a very different opinion, and which I have yet to share. And I will do that after this recording's done. So it's still not on recording.
Well.
But with that said, you have any other thoughts on this one?
Yes, I have one more extra thought.
Yeah, we have time. Honorable mention. Okay. Have at her.
This is, oh my god, we started talking about so much like Avengers, Marvel shit. Can we talk about how much I really just compared everything to like Captain America with, you know, Super Soldier Serum, Margaret, Peggy, and I'm just did you notice that?
I did not. I made two other movie references while watching this movie.
Ooh.
Neither of which was Captain America, so well done.
Wow. I also want to make, this is the honorable mention to the honorable mention, Game of Thrones at the end where he's just like, winter has come.
Which is, again, another reference that I did not make, despite you not watching that series. Jesus Christ.
How is that possible?
So one of the ones that I thought was when they had that big establishing shot of Arkham Asylum, I'm like, why are we at Azkaban? What is this?
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
It looked like Azkaban.
It is really Azkaban.
Yeah.
Really thin.
And the other one, which this is such a hand grenade joke, this is mainly just for me because I love this movie, was The Producers with Matthew Broderick, Nathan Lane, Will Ferrell, and Uma Thurman, who plays this like Swedish actress.
Oh my lord.
Who does like an audition for Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick. And then at some point she goes, and now Ulla dance. And she does this like hip thing. And people are just looking at her butt, go side to side.
Oh my lord.
And when she took off the monkey suit, I just want to say it like, and now Ulla dance. Because everyone's just staring at her. I'm like, do it, do it, do it.
Oh my lord. Okay.
Even though this is like 7 years before The Producers was made.
Alright, well, on that note, if with no other thoughts at the end of this, this has been the Movie Masochist Podcast, where two friends try to find the fun in painful films. I have been Kim.
And I have been Joby.
And if you also want to continue the conversation, we are on social media and we are always open to your thoughts and extra commentary. You can find us on Instagram at Movie Masochists with an S at the end, or on Twitter at Movie Masochist_. We'll catch you guys next time.